This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and today I am joined by...
Luyando Onati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Onati!
And...
Jeremy Cobb, but Chelsea Harris calls me the Cobb Goblin.
The Cobb Goblin.
I love the Cobb Goblin.
That's very good.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
And I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Yes. I like this. It's when you first said it, I did. My mind did go somewhere a little rude first.
Where did your mind go?
Well, just the first letter of the. It's a whole. Don't worry. It doesn't
the
matter.
Knob goblin?
We.
Like the
Effectively, yeah, that was kind of effectively the where my brain... I'm not saying it made sense. I'm just saying that's where my brain went. You know what I mean?
I thought of the Spider-Man villain.
Well, that was the second place, and that was the logical place. That was obviously, I think...
Or the D&D probably, race.
That was the first place I went.
That was what they were going for.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
It's hot.
I'll blame it on the fact that it's hot.
Fun fact, I knew about the Hobgoblin in Spider-Man before I knew about the Green Goblin. I had a VHS of the animated show, like the 90s Spider-Man animated show, and the first one I ever got was him fighting the Hobgoblin. And so I knew who the Hobgoblin was, but I did not know who the Green Goblin was for quite a while.
I always found that was like a very tricky thing with VHSs, because like figuring out what order stuff went in, because I used to get stuff from like the local Blockbusters or something, like rent stuff from there, and like either my mum would go and just go, oh, he likes this thing, and pick one up, and I'd be like, what, this is like two seasons later or something, and not have a clue what was going on, or it'd just be completely different characters.
Yeah, like Digimon, it's like the wrong set of Digidestined.
I think I did genuinely had it with, it was either Digimon or like Pokemon or something like that, and I remember being like,
where's Brock?
Where's
Misty?
Who are these guys? Wait, he's got a Gyarados now? When did that happen?
Ash
I think since then, what was it, sorry?
Just want to throw out that Ash never actually got a Gyarados, but Misty did eventually.
No, yeah, Misty, that's what, you said Misty.
Oh, but you said
don't
he's
shame
got
me.
A
Gyarados. You said Misty.
You said he's got
I did say he's got a Gyarados. I'm so sorry. I definitely did mean Misty. I have been shamed. I will hang my head in shame. Jamal, I am deeply sorry. Please allow me to continue on the show.
I definitely pictured Jamal as the Urkel, the Steve
Urkel. He's still
Urkel
very disappointed.
The Key and Peele sketch. Have you guys ever seen the Key and Peele sketch?
Yes, he really. That is exactly who Jamal is. That is a perfect interpretation of who Jamal is. Maybe one day we should have him on the show.
This shadowy eldritch figure, just controls everything.
Oh, so horrendous. Speaking of shadowy magical creatures that control everything.
Oh no, this is the wrong class for that, my friend. That would have been a great segue if we were doing warlocks.
Warlocks, I feel like there is some wizards that do have some shadowiness to them, you know, and
I
control
agree.
The battlefield with control spells.
Sure.
Will you give me that? Okay,
I will allow it.
We're doing wizards, everyone. We are here to do a deep dive on wizards. This has been a fun one for me, just my top line thoughts on wizards. It's been a fun one for me because very daunted by wizards, a little bit like the original, what's the one? It's gone out of my head now.
The original rogue?
It begins with A, and I've forgotten the name of it.
Artificer?
Artificer! Why did that leave my brain? It's like, I feel like it's like the original Artificer for me. I was just a bit like, ooh, that seems like a lot, and it's definitely less than I remembered. I think it's just, spells are daunting in this game. That's, you know, when you're first starting out, spells are daunting, and they have a lot of spells.
Yes, they have the most.
The most spells, as we will talk about. So, Jeremy, why don't you go ahead and start us off, run us down, for any of you who haven't listened to one of these before, what we tend to do is run down the actual class itself, then we each pick a subclass that we enjoy, and we run that down as well. Then we usually do a little catch-up afterwards on our Patreon to do the rest of the subclasses. So, you know, if you like this and you want a little bit more the Tasty Wizard, then you can. But Jeremy, sorry, carry on. You.
Well, I think the first thing to get out of the way with the Wizard is prior to the Artificer being released, the Wizard was the only class whose primary ability score was Intelligence. Intelligence was only ever a secondary ability score for any, like, and maybe for like the rogue. It didn't really come into play at all for the martial classes, anything like that. Still doesn't really.
Yeah, I guess there's not any like subclasses or whatever.
Unless you're
really,
well, yeah, it would be Arcane Trickster or Eldritch Knight.
Yeah, that's
Knight.
What I was thinking. There's a couple, yeah, kind of there. That
both of which, by the way, use wizard spells. Wizards, in contrast to, let's see, we already covered, is, what is the other primary spellcaster we've covered? Or is this the first? Is this the first primary spellcaster?
Yes. No, actually, I think this is
Oh, no, we did Bards. Yeah.
We did Bards.
In contrast to Bards, who get their magic from their connection to artistic expression, and, you know, the art that exists in the world around them, wizards get their magic through careful study. Careful and relentless study. They are the bookworms of the magic set.
So much.
Yes.
So much planning into libraries. Too much planning
into damn libraries. All that time spent with the books is reflected by their 1d6 hit die.
That is rough.
Tied the sorcerer for the lowest.
It is so rough. 1d6.
They have spent a lot of time around dusty books, probably have some spots on their lungs from the mold and so forth that they've ingested just from breathing in all these dusty rooms. It's not very good HP at all. It's not good. You tend to be made of tissue paper, especially at low levels. However, gets better because they have no armor proficiencies.
Yeah,
they have no proficiency in armor or shields, which means that unless you take a feat or opt into a subclass that gives you a proficiency or multi-class, your wizard is stuck with 10 plus whatever dex you give them for their AC. Wizards,
tasty.
Wizards not built for close combat. Very much not built for close combat.
I would recommend, just up the top here, is that with intelligence being pretty much the only stat that you really need to worry about, unless you're doing something like with a different flavor or etc., like, you know, a high charisma or something, you could definitely take some high con. Like, I would recommend if you've got a high constitution, if you could get an extra +3 or even +4 if you really pushed it every level, it's going to make a whole chunk of difference when you're only getting a d6 to add on. Like, yeah. Definitely go with some high con if
could
you can.
Really, yeah, high con and or high dex. Both of those options.
Yeah,
could
just
be
to get out of the way.
Yeah. Con, and also those are both good for saves. You probably want good wisdom too. Because if you get hit by some of this stuff, you can't take much damage. You just don't have
Sorry. And you can't heal either.
That's the other thing. I'm going to get to that in a second. But first, I want to point out that wizards do get to use, they are proficient in daggers, darts, slings, quarterstaffs, and light crossbows. I would not suggest using a quarterstaff because it would require you to get in close.
Probably better to use a sling
or really a light crossbow. And you are proficient in intelligence and wisdom saving throws because you are all about the mind. You start with two skills, choosing from arcana, history, insight, investigation, medicine, and religion. Most of those are intelligence-based skills, and so you should have solid skill scores if you opt for high intelligence, which, unless you are intentionally building a less mechanically effective wizard, you should. Starting equipment that really depends on what you do, like in terms of like how you actually play the game, because some people don't actually use the starting equipment. But the relevant parts for the next little bit here are you can start with either a component pouch or an arcane focus, and you can also start, and this is almost in about 100% of cases going to be necessary, a spell book. Now, this is the part where wizards get tricky, I think, for a lot of people, in contrast to a lot of other classes.
And a little overwhelming, I think, for some people. So hopefully we can try and debug some of this.
Yes.
So it's easier to get your head around.
Because wizards are all about study, in contrast to clerics who have like a list of spells that their deity has granted them, and then they can choose to prepare them. Wizards have to copy spells into their spell book. That's where their list of spells is. So they start at first level, you know, 3 cantrips from the wizard spell list, and then you can gain additional cantrips as you gain levels. So cantrips are simple enough that you just always know them. But once you start getting into leveled spells, I think it's a little bit trickier to hold all that in your mind. So at first level, you have a spell book containing 6 first level wizard spells of your choice. The spells that you add to your spell book as you gain levels reflect the arcane research you conduct on your own, as well as intellectual breakthroughs you've had about the nature of the multiverse. You can also find other spells during your adventures, which is a big thing in contrast to most other classes, where they're not really as basically that brings me to the next point, which is you can copy a spell into your spell book. There's no mechanic in the other classes that allows you to just add spells that you find, whereas with wizards you can find copies of spell scrolls. Maybe you find a teacher who's willing to train you in one specific spell.
You find some arcane like rune scratchings on the wall.
Exactly.
And you're like, I'm gonna try some crazy dark magic from a forgotten time. It's yours.
I like this a lot because it adds a level. It adds an element of exploration and discovery into the wizard, and leans into that whole studious part of it. Because you're not just like sitting in a dark room anymore. Now you can be like an Indiana Jones type. Like you're out there exploring, maybe not raiding other people's cultures, but when you're out there exploring and gaining more knowledge. And when you find a wizard spell of first level or higher, you can add it to your spell book if it's of a level for which you have spell slots, and if you can spare the time to decipher and copy it. So I'll read the text exactly as it's written here, just so it's clear. Copying a spell into your spellbook involves reproducing the basic form of the spell, then deciphering the unique system of notation used by the wizard who wrote it. You must practice the spell until you understand the sounds or gestures required, then transcribe it into your spellbook using your own notation. Now, what does that mean for you as the player? What that means is, for each level of the spell, the process takes 2 hours and costs 50 gold pieces. The cost represents material components you expend as you experiment with the spell to master it, as well as the fine inks you need to record it. Once you have spent this time and money, you can prepare the spell just like your other spells. So what that means is, if you find a first level spell just somewhere out in the world, for 2 hours and 50 gold pieces, you can add it to your spellbook. If you find a fifth level spell, and you can cast fifth level spells out there in the world, you for 10 hours and 250 gold pieces, you can copy it into your spellbook. So it gets harder and more costly to gain higher level spells this way. Now, this is not the
only... That is expensive as well. Like, in D&D terms, that is not cheap.
That's
50 gold pieces, I think it's described as like a gold piece or two is like a good wage for like a week or something.
Yeah.
So like 50 pieces is... Yeah. Hell of money.
I will say, hopefully by the time you're able to be casting level 5 spells or 5th level spells, you can get
you've got a lot
of money. Like
yeah,
you may
yeah,
have saved
yeah,
a kingdom
yeah.
or two.
Have
a wealthy benefactor. But you can, if your book is, if you like, say you find another spell book and you're like, oh, I want to copy my spells into this book. Or say the DM introduces like some magic spell book that has some special properties. You can replace your current spell book by copying a spell from your own spell book into another book. If you wanted to, this is just like copying a new spell into your spell book, but faster and easier since you understand your own notation and already know how to cast the spell. You only need 1 hour and 10 gold pieces for each level of the copied spell. So that fifth level spell now becomes 5 hours and 50 gold pieces to copy it. And if you can use the same process if you lose your spell book or say your spell book is destroyed. However, the difference here is if you lose your spell book, you can only use this procedure to transcribe the spells that you have prepared into a new spell book. So essentially wizards function like clerics or druids where you have an established spell list that you can prepare spells from. It's just that in your case, your established spell list isn't some nebulous thing where it's just, you just have access to these spells. It's in your book. So I would say it's a fun bit of flavor and an extra complication.
Yes. Yeah. And it is, there is definitely a give and take scenario there. Like the take is that you can take any spell. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's very, very cool. Like that you can reach across the aisle and be like, oh, thank you. But
that's true. I think it doesn't, it does specify wizard spells.
Yeah. But I mean, I think when you're crafting them, you can kind of be like, oh, okay, well, I realize I need this now. Like, you're not backed into a corner like you are. Like, that's one of the things I find a bit frustrating with, like, sorcerers, for instance, is that you kind of just go, I've got this now, and then you get to, like, level 15, and you're like, well, some of these spells are so useless to me because I do that with other things or just innately now, or, you know. So I think that's kind of fun, is that it does give you that kind of flexibility. Mm-hmm. And I also think it leaves a lot of room for you to potentially create spells. I actually thought that before this that wizards were the only ones that created spells. I thought that was what their shtick was that they could make their own. I think it is, we've actually established now that like it is other spellcasting
theoretically any spellcaster could do that.
But I think it makes a very easy, like, this is the monetary value for doing so. It might just, we might like up the, you know, hours and money to, as you're trying to figure it out for yourself,
right?
But I feel like as a DM, I would be generous to players and be like, hey, look, like, I'm not going to make you go out and find all of these or whatever. Like, I'm going to, or like, you know, sacrifice whatever. If you've got an idea of a spell that's similar to a different one, we can reskin it. We can, do you know what I mean? I think you can definitely do that.
Yeah.
Like, if you can plausibly say your character came up with that idea or whatever, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, they do suggest that many wizards, for the sole reason that you can lose your spell book or have it destroyed, many wizards keep backup spell books in a safe place. You can also decide what your book looks like. So, who knows? Maybe it's not even like a physical book. Maybe it's like notebook.
I kind of thought, I feel like it would be cool if they came up with some...
it's all tattooed all over your body.
Tattooed on yourself, That would be cool. I feel like it'd be cool if they came up with... They provided some sort of potential alternative to the spellbook. Like, I just feel like it's a very specific thing to have, like, a book that I scribe in. You know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like there could be other ways, I feel like, you could
like a spell
that.
Vessel. Some vessel where you record your spells.
Yeah, even if it was a bit like the warlock or whatever, like you make a little antechamber for yourself where you go in and you just etch it on the wall like a mad person. Like
pocket dimension?
Like you go in there and like, you know, I just feel like there's ways
you could be
your
mind palace. Maybe it's like your mind palace.
Yeah. That would be fun. Like if you've got such high intelligence, like I'd buy that you could do that. And then
make
if you get like mind feebled, then maybe you lose it.
Yeah.
Build it. You know, that could be like the version of losing a spellbook.
You
get your brain juiced.
You get your brain
blended
juice.
Smoothie. Ew.
I wanted to throw out an idea in like a more modern setting. It could be cool to have your spell book be like an audiobook or
like
an iPod playlist that you have. Yeah, even a dictaphone, like you're pressing the button, all the thing. You just have like a digital, like on an MP3 player, you're like cycling through the list. Or like on your cell phone, you have a notes, like you're cycling through all of your notes and stuff. But anyway, we've already established that you can prepare spells from your spell book. Pretty much all the spell casting beyond that is the same. You have spell slots that you use. It's all of that is the same. You just use intelligence in contrast to the other ones. Spell save DC, again, it's the same. 8 plus your proficiency bonus plus your primary spell casting ability modifier, which in this case is intelligence. Your spell attack modifier is proficiency bonus plus intelligence modifier. All that's the same. Wizards, in contrast to some other classes, can cast ritual spells. There are some classes who can and other classes who can't. I can't remember off the top of my head which ones can and can't, but essentially ritual casting, I believe, allows you to extend the casting time, multiply it by 10 or unless it's like one action, then it becomes a minute. If it's one minute, then it's 10 minutes. If it's 1 hour, it's 10 hours. If it's 1 minute, I think it becomes an hour. No. If it's 1 minute, it's 10 minutes. And basically you do that in exchange for not losing a spell slot.
Yeah.
You don't have to have the spell prepared as long as you have the spell in your spell book, which...
Ah, that's cool. I didn't know that, actually. Cool.
Yes, I don't remember if that part is the same for all classes, but I think
but
it is
also, like, is this the case that you can cast anything ritually, or is it literally just the spells that specifically say you can ritual cast?
Yes.
This? Is that still the case?
There are specific spells that have a ritual spell
tag.
I didn't know
whether you were saying that this class could do it for all spells. I was like, whoa.
No, that would be insane.
That would be wild.
That would be crazy.
Way broken.
Yeah, I was like, that's
what wish, without expending a spell slot.
Yeah, be cool.
Yes.
Yeah, and times that by 1,000, that action time, and then we'll talk.
And then each time, now, I want to clarify, because you don't it should not be true that the only, unless you really want to play that way, the only way that you can add spells to your spell book is just by finding them. This isn't like just some treasure hunt. You actually do get to add automatically 2 wizard spells of your choice to your spell book every time you gain a level. They must be of a level for which you have spell slots. But then, you know, you can just fill that out with additional spells. And that's a fun thing that DMs... It's just basically a fun dimension of the game that other classes just don't get in terms of adding additional spells that way.
Cool. It's still one of my favorite elements of... whenever I used to listen to Critical Role is just Liam's character, I'm just going off to get paper. Every new city they went to just went and spent like 200, 300 gold pieces worth of gold on just paper to scribe his spells.
Oh my god.
It was so funny every single time they got to a new city, like, you know where I'm going.
He eventually becomes encumbered just because of the weight of his spell
book. Just the weight of paper.
Yeah, paper ain't light, man.
No.
And then I guess the final starting thing that we should discuss is arcane recovery. Once per day, when you finish a short rest, you can choose expended spell slots to recover. Spell slots can have a combined level that is equal to or less than half your wizard level, rounded up. And none of the spells can be 6th level or higher. So they give the example, if you're a 4th level wizard, you can recover up to 2 levels worth of spell slots. You can recover either a 2nd level spell slot or 2 1st level spell slots. Wizards are one of the only classes that can do this. Warlocks get all their spells
back
automatically.
All of it back, but they only get like 3 spell slots.
Yes.
Like, it's like really minimal how many spell slots you get. It's painful. Because all you do is Eldritch Blast and then you're hitting things, but then occasionally you get to do something cool and big.
I believe Circle of the Land Druids can do something similar to this. I'd have to look at the exact language of it, but they can also regain at least 1 spell slot. I think it's basically the same thing. They can regain spell slots after a short rest, but it's limited. It's a very nice thing. It's a big old perk. I didn't mention this yet, but in terms of the spell list, wizards have the longest list of spells that they can learn from. They are the... Bards may be the most versatile class in terms of what role you can fill, but wizards have the most versatile spell list. The only thing they cannot do is heal.
Yes.
Okay.
Everything else, they are either almost the best at or potentially the best at, depending on what subclass you're choosing. Wizards make incredible blasters. They make really good utility, a lot of different things. They can do just
area control.
Area
control, I think they might be the best. Generally, I don't think that when you get to a higher level, some of those spells and then layering on some of the abilities, it gets really cool for area control stuff. Like, I think, that's the way I want to do this. But yeah, why don't we do some like quick thoughts on wizards just generally, and then we could do some maybe some suggestions for potential races as well, and like lineages or whatever.
Because
that's what we normally do. We throw out some just ideas of what, you know, some cool stuff that people might
the race list
have a go with.
Should we do the race list first, or
okay. let's do that. Let's just throw out any potential cool options.
Okay, well, if we're going basic handbook, the obvious choice is the gnome, because they get a +2 to
plus
intelligence. Beyond that, there you'd want something. Unless you're playing by the Tasha's rules that allow you to or if you just want to build a non-optimized wizard, unless you want to do all of that stuff, you should pick something that has a boost to intelligence. Mm-hmm. So tieflings get a plus one, not ideal, but hey, it's better than nothing. Then the only, there are not very many races that get boosts to intelligence. Hobgoblins get a plus one, which you don't hear a lot about a lot of hobgoblin wizards. That would be pretty cool. Yuan-Ti purebloods get a plus one to intelligence. Feral tieflings get gith.
I've got a couple I think would be very cool potential options.
Yeah, a final one is the Vedalken. The Vedalken and the Gnome are the did I just say Gnome?
Gnome.
The Vedalken and the Gnome are the only two races that naturally get a plus two to intelligence, and therefore are technically, mechanically speaking, the best choices for a wizard at like just a basic level.
As we always say, Tasha's rules, it's officially like D&D like canon now. Just tell your DM, Tasha's rules, I'm just going to pick a different thing and have a plus two to intelligence.
Yeah.
My suggestion is going to be, though, even if you wanted to keep it the same, I love the idea of a gith wizard. I think the gith just have some cool abilities that just, especially if you went for the, is it the gith Sarai? Let me just double check that I'm getting that right, that it is actually the
gith
Sarai.
I think it is the gith Sarai.
Yeah, the gith Sarai, you get like a plus two to your wisdom and a plus one to intelligence, which not like overall the best, but wisdom could be useful. I also just like the fact that you get advantage against being charmed and frightened, which could be really fun. And then you get things like you get Mage Hand for free, and you get to cast Shield from third level onwards, I believe, and then Detect Thoughts from fifth level. So just cool little spells that aren't going to take up a slot, or you don't have to learn them. And other big suggestion, and I quite like this, a Warforged, just because I feel like you're getting a good constitution in there, then you get a plus one to intelligence, and I'm pretty sure you get a natural bonus to your AC, if I'm not wrong.
Oh yeah, because you can choose with a Warforged. You can just choose a plus one to one other ability score.
Yeah, and then you get a plus one to your, you can get a plus one to your AC, I think it's pretty cool. A turtle. You can also go for a turtle to ensure high armor class.
Because
you're very squishy underneath.
Changelings. I forgot to mention, changelings also get a plus one to an ability score. Ooh. So you could build a charisma wizard.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
You could
maybe you couldn't afford to attend an academy, and so you've been like posing as other students just to be able to sneak in and learn
cool. And every day you get kicked out.
Yeah.
Every day, by the end of the day, someone goes, "Wait, you don't go here." And then you just, new day, different new student, day. Here I go.
La, 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 la.
You know what I just realized, though? You know what could also work? Are the Gothic lineages. Because with those, you get to choose which two you increase just automatically, even if you're not playing by the Tasha's rules. That's just how those lineages function. So Dampier, Hexblood, and Reborn could all make good wizards.
Yeah.
Very good. Very cool.
I like that. That would make, I think that flavor-wise as well, very fun, I feel like, for a wizard.
Yeah.
Very, very fun to be undead. And it also kind of plays into, you know, you can play into being a bit squishy naturally then as well, as opposed to just like, I am a frail old wizard. You know,
just,
like,
just because you're extra ripe, just because you're like a little
extra ripe. That bit's just fallen off there, but let me get that for you.
But I mean, dude, the thing is, reborns get advantage on death saves, and they don't need to eat, sleep, or breathe. So,
hell yeah, that makes you a lot harder.
Really, yeah, really, that's pretty useful. Good.
Yeah.
And like, if you get into trouble, just dive underwater and just sit at the bottom.
There.
Like, do you know what I mean? At least projectiles will have disadvantage trying to hit you. So, that's you might still have line of sight as well. So, who knows? That's a potential option.
Yeah.
Also, I actually would like to throw out Tabaxi if you were going to use Tasha's rules, just because their hypermobility around the battlefield could be really, really helpful just to get in the hell out of Dodge if you get into trouble.
Yeah.
I feel like that could be fun.
By the same token, Tritons, if you're playing in a seafaring campaign, Tritons can just automatically breathe underwater, as can some kinds of Ganassi. They can just be fine, like, underwater, which could provide, like, a cover for you. Like, say you're on the sea, you're on the high seas, and you basically have, you can have, like, this trick if you're on a ship where you basically tie a rope around yourself and hop off the side of the boat. Being dragged along, like, under the water, just blasting above you. And you have, like, a little periscope, like, poking out.
Yeah, just a little.
So that you can see clearly, and you're just...
That would be nice. So funny. I've actually, there's a potentially part of my subclass would be fun for this build as well, so we can get into that in a bit. Beautiful. Any thoughts generally on the wizard before we dive into, like, what we'll do, the what the wizard gets as, like, a base, and then we'll go into subclasses. I guess that probably makes sense. So yeah, just any thoughts on the wizard? I think I'll jump in. I think for me, the only thing is I'd like some more suggestions on what your spellbook could be. I feel like there's more scope, and I would say I'd encourage people to, like, just find out what a spellbook is for your wizard. Like, me as a DM, I'd be very, very open to, like, not just going with a book and have to DM describe you spending hours just writing away in your book. Do you know what I mean? I feel like there's more, like, you know, going into a, if it's a mind palace, going into, like, a trance for 4 hours and your head shifting around like Doctor Strange style. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that could be a cool version or whatever.
I'd still want there to be a cost, though, because it's built into the even the subclasses that you're supposed to have, like, advantage or not advantage, but you're supposed to have an easier time copying certain kinds of spells. But so I'd say, like, whatever.
If you had, like, a ritual, for instance, in that case, I'd say, like, oh, you've got a ritual you need to perform, which takes X amount of hours, and you need, like, these, like, incense or certain types of, like, crystals, do you know what I mean? To, like, set the ritual up that allows, like, you to kind of go into the state, do you know what I mean, of which you can do it. And it still takes the same amount of hours and stuff like
and
that.
And you still have to spend the gold pieces on the materials on for the ritual and stuff.
For sure.
Or if you're getting tattoos, you have to pay for the ink and pay for the artist.
It's
really, really expensive. I mean, like, I've only ever had to deal with a wizard once in a game of mine, and then we just sort of built it into his schooling and tutelage, and it was just a room that would be any scenario required for him to master and learn a spell. So we didn't have to describe him sitting down and writing it down into his book. He had to just keep replaying it and losing every time until he got it right. So we just had these really fun,
like,
combats.
Like a trial room type.
Yeah, it's like a
that's
trial
very
room.
Cool.
Like, really,
like,
fun
the X-Men,
combats.
The X-Men.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's like a Cerebro. Yeah. Simulation type thing.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the room. I'm ashamed of the fact I can't remember the name of the
X-Men room.
Because
I just got so sick and tired of describing libraries. I'm just like, if I have to talk about one more library and play this librarian one more time, I'm going to freak out.
Is it the same librarian every time?
Yeah, it's the same librarian, because she appears wherever you go into the library. She just exists in all of them at once. And all she ever does is go, shh, and it's really frustrating.
She's like Nurse Joy or Officer Jenny.
Yes.
It's not clear what, like, they claim to be sisters, but it's just her.
But it's definitely just her. I really enjoy that. I think because if you do that, then I think it really gives you, like, so much potential for flavor and to, like you said, because you effectively get a free hit on your next stat. Like, you don't really have to worry too much about the next stat. Like we said, we'd advise constitution so you're not that squishy, but you could you know, absolutely, like you said, if you went for, like, I don't know if any of us are doing it, but if you went for, like, blade singing or something, or even war mage, I think, which are definitely subclasses to help you be a bit more combat focused, you could then flavor them differently. You could even go strength or dex or something like that. Do you know what I mean? That could be that could be fun. I enjoy versatility. It's good.
I haven't even really looked at either of those classes. I wonder if they're similar to some of the Artificer ones, where it lets you substitute your intelligence instead of a physical stat.
I think I could be wrong. Yeah, I think it could be right. Yeah, it's like you get to add, like, your intelligence to, like, attack roll, like melee attack rolls, or something. Like, it'd be something like that, I think. But I could be wrong because there's a lot of subclasses for this.
I think it's the second most for the wizard.
Which makes sense. They're kind of like the OG, right? Of this, like, I feel like if you think fantasy, even if you don't think Eurocentric fantasy, you still think of a version of a wizard. Do you know what I mean? Whether it be like a witch doctor, or whether it be, do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many you know, shaman. I think even like though them, they probably go more into wizard and druid, you know. Yeah, so they're kind of the OGs.
Yeah.
Nice. Should we start talking about some subclasses?
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry, we've got to do the, we've got to run down what the actual wizard gets. Apologies. The cool stuff that they get.
You do get your, but I mean, speaking of the subclasses, you do get an arcane tradition starting at second level, which are your subclasses.
Which are your subclasses. That was what I was going to do.
Yes.
I was going to run through the schools of magic.
Yeah, I was going to say part of the reason that there are so many wizard subclasses is because there is one for every single school of magic.
Yes. And we thought this would be a good thing to just run through just to kind of clarify. Because also, DMs out there, it's good to just good to know. Just generally as well, I tend to find one of my least favorite questions to have to answer is, oh, I cast a tech magic or whatever it is. Can I find out what school of magic this is? And I'm like, oh, god, I have no idea because I've homebrewed this thing. So I feel like it's good to just have a really baseline familiarization with the schools of magic.
Yeah.
And I found something which I will try and put in the show notes from the Alpine DM. It's just like a very simple
the real Alpine DM.
The real Alpine DM.
Alpine DM.
Just like a very basic kind of like simple this like headline. This is what the schools are. So I'm just going to run through this real quick. So we've got School of Conjuration. This is pulling a rabbit out of a hat. It's just making objects appear, disappear. It can be living things. It could be objects. There's a whole bunch of stuff. And this is also, I guess, like, yeah, it's just summoning stuff out of thin air. And I guess there is a there's potentially a few crossovers with this one. Banishment isn't this, even though you're making something like disappear, because that goes into a slightly different school. But anyway, but some spells are in this. Find Familiar, Conjure Elemental, Plane Shift, Wish, they're all conjuration. Necromancy. This is an interesting one because I've seen this in a few different places, and I would be up for this in being implemented in my game. Healing spells should be necromancy. That's my opinion. That's what I think.
You think that the necromancer should get healing spells?
I think they should get healing spells because I think it's about the ebb and flow of life more than it's just about like dead things. Do you know what I mean? I think it's like, it feels really restrictive for anyone who's trying to do like any kind of necromantic build. Like, oh, you can only kill things or bring things back once they are dead. And things like Revivify, I don't think that's actually a necromancy spell, and I don't understand why that wouldn't be a necromancy spell.
It is.
Are you sure?
I think all resurrection spells are necromancy spells. I'll check though. Yeah, Revivify is necromancy. You just don't get it as a wizard.
But anyway, I think that you should get access to healing spells.
I don't agree. I think that would over-centralize the meta, so to speak. Because at that point, you now have a wizard who has access to everything a wizard can do and then can also resurrect.
Yeah, I'm not saying necessarily the wizard should get it. I'm just saying, I just think generally healing spells should be under the necromancy umbrella.
I think
healing word and things aren't.
Oh really? What's healing word?
No, they are. I should have prepared this, given this is the point I was making.
Because I know the resurrection spells. The resurrection spells are necromancy.
Let me find.
Like raise dead is. Reincarnation does not appear to be
evocation. Which feels
interesting.
Weird.
Interesting.
Yeah, feels weird. See, that's what that was the point I was making. Sorry, apologies for
I'm with you there.
That was the point I was
agree
making.
With
was
you now.
Healing spells should be under the necromancy. Not say that necromancers or school of necromancy should get access to these spells because
I'm
I kind
with
of agree
you right
with
there.
You. It's just just because I think it's the ebb and flow of life, right? That's the whole thing of necromancy. Evocation. We'll go on to that one next. This is your Kamehameha. This is like the blasty blast. It's the different elements. It's like raw magical energy. So here you've got Burning Hands, you've got Fireball, you've got Meteor Swarm. Lightning Bolt. Anything that's like pure arcane energy, whether that's an elemental effect or not, that's going to fall into evocation.
Can we use a rabbit metaphor? Because we used the conjuration is pulling the rabbit out of the hat.
Okay, cool. So we're bringing the rabbit
like
back to life.
This is making the rabbit blow up.
Yeah. This is stay still, bunny. I want to try something.
Having a rabbit flamethrower.
Oh my god!
You grab the ears.
That would be kind of cool. That would be a kick-ass rabbit.
Tail to prime it.
Be cute.
Yeah. Very cute.
Aww.
You know Unati is going to ask for one of these in a future campaign at some point.
Yeah.
A flame-throwing rabbit is absolutely... Like, a flame-throwing rabbit companion is absolutely something that Unati now wants.
Yes, I do. That's adorable.
It could be your spellcasting focus. Is the rabbit.
Oh my
all
gosh.
Of the spells just come out of the rabbit.
If you get the lucky feat, that it's because you took... that it's what the rabbit's feet... Is
yes.
like the source of the lucky feet.
It just like it shakes a leg and a new like just like a new foot grows out and the old one falls off and you get it.
Thank you.
Oh my god! It's like a lizard.
Yes. So if you pull on it, this is again we can move on.
It takes like weeks to grow back. Like an amphibian. That's awesome.
Oh dear. So then we have abjuration. This is shields, protections. This is working with pure forces of evil or good. It's sort of like, I guess it's kind of close. Yeah, it's protection,
and
but
like
I guess
warding.
It could be. Yes, warding. That's the word I was looking for.
So this would be if you use your dark powers to keep the Eldritch rabbit from crossing over to our plane, or otherwise banish the rabbit back into the confines of the hat.
Yes, absolutely. So here we have things like dispel magic, shield, dispel good and evil, greater restoration, invulnerability.
Cool.
Anti-magic field. Fun times. Fun times over here in abjuration. Divination is next. This
knowing
is
when
like,
the rabbit will appear.
Yes, very good, Jeremy. Or like, I guess knowing what kind of rabbit it is, or whether the rabbit is like secretly a Tarrasque
in
hiding.
It's going to be an Angora rabbit.
Yeah. Or finding out whether this rabbit is like ancient and has been around for a millennia and has secrets untold.
You know the inner workings of the rabbit. You can read the rabbit's mind.
Yeah. So you've got identify, scrying. Love that spell. It's an OG. Locate creatures, true seeing, and foresight. Ooh.
And detect thoughts.
Yes, detect thoughts is also on there. Enchantment. This is, I guess, making
forcing
the rabbit asleep.
To do your bidding.
Yeah.
Yes. I went slightly less sinister than yeah, rabbit, do this. I was like, hey, go to sleep, rabbit.
Aww.
I mean, yeah, that's, you're forcing the rabbit to do your bit. You really want this rabbit to take a nap.
There's some crazy good spells in here. We've got person, sleep, modify memory, mass suggestion, feeble mind, power word kill.
Yes.
How you like that? Power word kill. That spell it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
There's some auto's irresistible dance if you really want this rabbit to start getting crunk.
I hate that spell. This is a fun little tidbit here. Jeremy managed to screw me over from a campaign he ran previously, managed to screw me over in a campaign that I ended up running because Jeremy gave our friend Johnny an item which allowed him to just cast Otto's Irresistible Dance like once per day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a ridiculously good spell, but he plays the same character in my campaign and I felt really weird being like, no, you can't have that cool item that you got. But it was from a different DM and it's so overpowered and I'm having to deal with it, not you. School of Illusion. This is smoke and mirrors. This is making the rabbit
making it appear that there are multiple rabbits.
Yes. Yeah.
Confusing the rabbit's mind.
Generally beguiling either the rabbit or those looking upon the rabbit.
All of your rabbit beguilement spells.
Episode title. This is disguise. You've got disguise self, silent image, invisibility, hallucinatory terrain. I'm a big fan of that spell. Lots of really fun applications. Project image. Weird. What's weird? I've never heard of this
spell
before.
Weird is
not
okay,
I'm not going to bother looking it up.
Okay.
It was just on the list here. And then finally, we've got transmutation. This is water into wine.
Turn your rabbit into a hare.
Turn your rabbit into a hare, into a dog, whatever, really.
Into another hat?
Into another hat, of which you pull a rabbit using your yeah.
Exactly, but is it the same rabbit?
Using conjuration, but is
it
the
same
rabbit?
We have no idea.
Oh, that is, like, really quite a, like, terrifying thought.
I feel like the whole episode should be about this now, but no. This is more interesting to me than anything else we've said so far.
We need to figure out what came first, the rabbit or the hat.
Speaking of which, just want a quick side note. Prestige, still one of Chris Nolan's best movies.
Oh, unbelievable film. Oh, yeah. I recently showed it to Jade because I was like, this is arguably my favorite Chris Nolan film. And she was like, what? But you're obsessed with Batman. And I was like, wait. And she watched it and was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Such a good film.
Hugh Jackman's speech towards the end, probably my favorite bit of dialogue.
Yeah. Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale just going together, just on the level, just chewing scenery. I was like,
they're both so good.
It's like a delicious meal of a movie. You're just like, yes. I do too. It's very, very, very,
very good.
Almost as good as Tenet.
Oh, there it is. And with Transmutation, you get things like Shape Water, Featherfall, Gaseous Form, Stone Shape, Polymorph, Etherealness. I guess True Polymorph as well. That's also
True Polymorph.
True Polymorph. What an unbelievable spell. You're a spoon. You're a spoon.
The rabbit is now a hat.
The rabbit is now a hat. Truly a hat. From which you pull another rabbit.
No.
So yes, I think it's just good to know what the schools are, because it's like we said, like when you're homebrewing things, when you're coming up with stuff on the fly, it's good to know like where that might sit. And again, if you've got a wizard or a primary spellcaster that's got those kinds of spells, you don't want to like punish them, which I definitely have in the past, for like being clever and doing something cool like that by just not having anything ready to go. Do you know what I mean? Whereas at least if you have this, either have this list somewhere that's it's just very easy to go, okay, or now you can use the three black halflings method. What happens to the rabbit?
It's the simplest way,
If the rabbit interacts with the thing that you've made or the spell that you've created, what happens to the rabbit?
I've had to do this before on the fly once one of my characters or once one of my PCs got detect magic, because they would just use it very, very frequently, which I thought was a great idea. But I would then have to pull up the quick list and be like, okay, based on what I know is here, I didn't think of like which schools were going to be present ahead of time, but now I can just look at this list and be like, oh, okay, yeah, you'd have this one, this one, and probably more of this one.
I guess what would be fun, I don't think we actually discussed this, but we could say what school Mootie's Moonslither would be in. I'm guessing conjuration.
I would say conjuration.
Conjuring. conjuring a moon out of thin air. A rabbit shaped moon.
English is running.
Yeah. English is
running.
We're going to do the rest of this.
I would say, interestingly, it functions in a few ways because it also is like simultaneously damage and battlefield control, but I would agree. I think conjuration,
conjuration
is
at
the best.
At its core. Yeah. Because I guess the idea is that it is just summoning a moon, which then does stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like that is almost like a byproduct of me summoning a moon.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's, you know what I mean? So it's not like the initial essence of the spell.
I like that spell, man. I like what we did there.
I really like what we did there as well. I don't know if people will... I don't know when this is coming out. I don't know if people will have heard me use this spell in combat yet, but wait till you do if you haven't, because damn. And if you haven't, you need to go listen to it now. If it's out and it's available, you need to go listen to it now, because it's a cool spell.
There's a couple of other schools that we... Or not schools, excuse me, but subclasses, because most of the wizard subclasses are just those schools. There's a few others, like the Bladesinger, Chronergy, Graviturgy, Order of Scribes, and...
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
War magic, yes. Which are a little bit more nebulous.
And actually, there is now there's the UA as well, which is the, I believe it is the Magic the Gathering, based on the Magic the Gathering, which is like the schools of Stricken, is it? There's some UA there as well. We won't be getting into that. There's a lot to get through as it is. But we will have one non-player handbook subclass today, but we have a couple from the original list. Should we dive in?
There's still some more wizard abilities. Not many, because the wizard is not... Once you get past all the front-loaded stuff... And you, because really, what we just described may sound complicated, but once you understand it, I have a spell book, I write spells in it, I prepare spells from that list, and then I deal with like studying different kinds of magic. It's pretty straightforward from there.
Because that is the main crux in the, like, that's how you build your wizard, right? It's through this spell book, whatever it is. Like, that's how you kind of go, like, are they going to be an AoE type wizard? Are they going to be a blaster type wizard or a protection type? Do you know what I mean? That's kind of what you're then dealing with. So like effectively the same as like it's almost like picking a secondary subclass. Do you know what I mean? You're almost like kind of like, okay, how is that going to then feed into X, Y, or Z? And subclasses will be better at other things. So, but yeah, do you want to go through those last little things before we dive into?
I'll just run through them real quick. So first one is Atasha's Cauldron of Everything option. It's optional. It's called Cantrip Formulas at third level. Whenever you finish a long rest and essentially consult your list of cantrips in your spell book, you can replace one wizard cantrip you know with another cantrip from the wizard spell list. So all it does basically is just gives you flexibility in terms of cantrips, which is very cool in my opinion. Most other class, I don't think any other class gets that level of flexibility with their cantrips.
Yes.
That's a cool one. Then we have the normal ability score improvement or feat, which you get at 4th, 8th, 12th, 16th, and 19th level. Pretty standard. That's the same. You can increase, you get 2 points that you can spend on either one ability score or 2 different ability scores, increasing each by 1, or you can take a feat. Mm-hmm. You also, at 18th level, that's the next keystone ability.
That's a jump.
At 18th level, you get Spell Mastery. You get to choose a first and second level wizard spell that are in your spell book, and you can cast those at their lowest level without expending a spell slot when you have them prepared.
So effectively turning it into a cantrip.
Yes, you basically turn a first level spell and a second level spell into a cantrip.
Pretty good.
Good. And you and I can also swap those out by spending 8 hours in study. You can swap one or both of the spells out for a different spell at the same level. And then at level 20, you get signature spell. You get to choose 2 third level wizard spells in your spell book as your signature spells. You always have them prepared. They don't count against the number of spells you have prepared, and you can cast each of them once at third level without expending a spell slot. You can do this once per short or long rest. And if you want to cast them either one at a higher level, you have to expend a spell slot as normal. But what that essentially means is you can just have Counterspell and Fireball always prepared.
Always.
And use them once per short rest as a, essentially as a cantrip.
I don't think anyone's doing evocation, but I'll throw this one out now. Just as like an idea of how you can use this ability to its maximum. With evocation, you have an ability where you can just once per like short rest or long rest, you can just choose for your spell to do max damage. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's fun. That's spicy. You know, when you got a Hail Mary you got to do? You know, like the DM says, hey, they're looking hurt, and you're one of the last ones standing. There you go.
Throw in a max damage fireball.
Throw in a max damage fireball. It's like 48 points, like guaranteed. Yeah. Oh, no, 24 points guaranteed.
Yeah. 48 points. If they fail. Which by level 20, your saves should be very high. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, very good.
Set of abilities.
Yeah. Not bad. Yeah. Not the best. Not like overpowered, I don't think. But coupled with some
very good spellcasting stuff.
That's what I think. Coupled with some of the subclass abilities can be very good. Very good. So why don't you bring us in with the first subclass, Inati? Finally, we are actually at the point that I've been saying we're at multiple times during this episode, and I don't know.
We've been trying, just like Tenet, we've been trying to get to the point.
just getting that point, and I keep having to bring it back and realize that it hasn't happened yet. It was funny because I think I prepared more for this episode than I have with any of the previous ones in terms of like, okay, we'll do this, I've got an idea for this, and then I just started recording, and immediately it's gone from my brain. But I don't think people would want it any other way. Otherwise, TB Halflings would be too predictable. And
The more professional this show gets, the less likable it becomes.
Hell yeah. I think that is 100% true.
Yeah.
People came for the shenanigans, okay? Yeah. And then they stayed maybe for the, you know, bit of actual learning something. But
you want that shambolic element.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got to be there.
So please, shambles your way through this, okay, cool. If you would like
to. Awesome, cool. So the School of Necromancy, I mean, it's in the name, right? And you're dealing with the ebb and flow of life and death. You focus your studies on manipulating anything that animates living things. You learn to sap the life force out of living creatures and transmute that energy to, you can manipulate that power into like magical power. Necromancers do get a bad rap because usually in most settings and most environments, being able to deal with death is taboo, you know? It's not really like, it's kind of frowned upon.
I have a thought.
Yeah.
This is like a genuine thought, and I want to know what you think.
Yeah.
I wonder whether that is like us using our real world opinions and putting it into a fantasy based setting, which obviously, of course, that's what we have to do because that's like our frame of reference, right?
Yeah.
But like in a world where essentially a pretty high level wizard could resurrect people or revivify people just like on a whim. I feel like maybe...
Well, but not revivify, animate their corpse.
Or animate their corpse, you know, that feels a little...
If it was just bringing people back, we have a whole different conversation. But this person's walking in and being like, oh, no, your sister is now my servant.
Okay, so the point I'm talking about, more is like dealing, just the idea of dealing with death is what I'm saying. Because I feel like you could play like a necromancer in various different classes that we've picked and do stuff like reincarnation or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I feel like that feels like it would not be frowned on as like a practice of magic to be like, hey, I'm gonna, you know, what's resurrection like? What's the things around resurrection? Is
I believe it's a 7th level spell. Let me check here.
Yeah, more than a century, didn't die of old age. But like, I feel like that, like, if that was like your end goal, I feel like that wouldn't be, it's not like you're doing anything.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily, like Jeremy was sort of saying, it's like, cool, like, if that's your end goal and that's the flavor you want to get to, but you still have to wait until you get a 7th level spell to actually do any of that. And
hell
for
yeah.
the most part, you are bringing back people's corpses.
And also, wizards don't get that spell. Only bards and clerics do.
Oh.
Wizards can't bring anybody back to life.
Ignore me. Yeah, if you're school of necromancy, you're a shady dude.
Well, Well, I mean, look, I mean, like, Sol really tried, like, in my kids game, like, he did really, really, really try, like, to play a really sweet
School of Necromancy.
School of Necromancy wizard. And it was kind of getting there in that he felt like there was, you know, he felt like he had to do things secretly at all times, but his goals were always good, and he tried to only bring back bad people's corpses.
Well, yeah, there you go. I guess the point ultimately I'm trying to make is that I feel like in a world in which these kinds of magics are just like taught and are just like around and like people have access to them, I feel like maybe they would be slightly less frowned upon than they would be in our world. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose maybe not frowned upon, but I think they've just definitely misunderstood, because I think there is an element of good and bad in all of these things. Like, you could go absolutely megalomaniacal in any of these schools. Yeah. So, do you know what I mean? So I think it's just that, yeah, the corpse thing, you know, we just can't get past
We can't get past the corpse thing. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Here's an idea for that may be a little bit more palatable. What if you are somebody who lost their pet, their beloved pet, and you brought your pet back, and you're primarily using this to bring back, like, facsimiles of animals or, like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you get to spend some time with your beloved pet.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Or like,
as long as it's like a creepy undead version of my pet, though, because in which case I'd rather they stayed dead.
See, that's the thing. You would want to, you want the pet to be as intact as possible. And
yeah.
You want the rabbit to have not evocation style spells beforehand,
you don't want your pet to have been run over by a car, and then you bring them back, and now they're an animated run over corpse, like somehow able to walk despite like being horribly injured.
Anyway,
we've got wildly
off
piece. I apologize, Darcy.
It's all good. Don't worry about it. The shambles is real. It's really hot. So basically, that's kind of the flavor you're probably going to be going for. You're going to probably land up in the realm of gloom and doom, unless, I don't know, you're like a jovial necromancer. But yeah.
Oh man, I want to see this. Necromancy the musical.
Musical, yeah, it'd be great.
We all use rabbits as spellcasting focuses.
Yeah.
My rabbit was dead, and now it's technically still dead, but it moves.
Yeah. So cool. So necromancy savant at second level. The golden time you have to spend to copy a necromancy spell into your spell book is halved. So that's useful if you want to be a necromancer. And then at second level, Grim Harvest, you gain the ability to reap life energy from creatures you kill with your spells. Once per turn, when you kill one or more creatures with a spell of first level or higher, you regain hit points equal to twice the spell's level or three times its level if the spell belongs to the school of necromancy. You don't gain this benefit for killing constructs or undead.
So you gain hit points for killing people with necromancy spells.
Okay, yeah, look, listen, I take my point, okay, and I blast it into space. sucking the life force out of things, yeah, it's probably pretty frowned on. Like,
I understand what you mean about, like, life and death, but it's not as holistic as that. You are literally taking someone's life force and turning it into your own magical power.
Maybe. Little vampiric.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cool, then at sixth level, you get undead thralls. You add the anime's dead.
Just getting worse.
I know, right? You add the anime.
I should look this subclass up before I open my damn mouth.
Judge, you're trying to be like, guys, why do we gotta give everybody a bad rap here? Let's be a little nicer to the necromancer.
Like, no.
I wish there was like a shot of Jasper's face throughout this. So you could just see the dismay and horror. Just like, oh no.
Necromancer.
People's perception of me has wildly changed over the course of this hour and a bit.
The next interview is like, so Jasper, I wanted to ask you, actually, why is it that you are in favor of bringing the dead back as a facsimile, really an insult of their former lives, under the control of a clearly nefarious individual?
Yeah. At sixth level, you add Animate Dead spell to your spell book if it's not already there. When you cast Animate Dead, you can target one additional corpse or pile of bones, creating another zombie or skeleton as appropriate. Whenever you create an undead using a necromancy spell, it has additional benefits. The creature's hit point maximum is increased by an amount equal to your wizard level, and the creature adds your proficiency bonus to its weapon damage rolls. Then at 10th level, you get Inured to Undeath. Beginning at 10th level, you have resistance to necrotic damage, and your hit point maximum can't be reduced. You have spent so much time dealing with undead and the forces that animate them that you have become inured to some of their worst effects.
Okay.
Because you're the dead gross guy. I mean, it's a pretty nice thing, but
that's
you're the dead gross guy.
That's the least
sinister factor of abilities.
Also,
I
just want to throw out, very helpful for a wizard who is going to have little hit points to start with.
Yeah.
Like, there are some creatures that a wizard could come up against and be instant, like, be gone in a round or two if they get their max hit points reduced. Because then also you could get insta-killed. Because that's a useful one.
And then finally, you get Command Undead. So starting at 14th level, you can use magic to bring undead under your control, even those created by other wizards. As an action, you can choose one undead that you can see within 60 feet of you. That creature must make a charisma saving throw against your wizard spell save DC. If it succeeds, you can't use this feature on it again. If it fails, it becomes friendly to you and obeys your commands until you use this feature again. Intelligent undead are harder to control in this way. If the target has an intelligence of 8 or higher, it has advantage on the saving throw. If it fails the saving throw and has an intelligence of 12 or higher, it can repeat the saving throw at the end of every hour until it succeeds and breaks free.
So, like, vampires. You can just straight control vampires.
I mean, it would be a tough one. You'd probably get a couple rounds, maybe, just because if
you get an hour.
Just because of the intelligence, I'm guessing, of a vampire, like, might
pretty
be
high.
Well, I don't know if it would be over 12.
But at least if it failed, you'd get an hour.
Yeah. No, didn't it say repeat at the end of its turn?
We have pretty good saves at that level.
Did it not say at the end of its turn?
If it fails the saving throw and has intelligence, it can repeat the saving throw at the end of every hour until it succeeds and breaks.
Oh, snap,
so you get
damn.
A free hour.
Yoink.
Yeah.
Hey, Strahd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
That's cool.
They're lots of fun. Full of light and joy.
That one you could make very unsinister, though.
Yes.
Town getting attacked by some undead, you just go, no.
No.
And you turn them around, or at least the leader or whatever. You turn them around. You say, no, not today, sir.
Exactly.
That's a good
and
one.
This doesn't seem to have a limit. This doesn't have a limit. You can use this over and over and over. This isn't like a once per short or long rest thing. You could just keep using it. As long as they're not making the save, you can just, like, so many zombies.
Skeleton army.
What I'm hearing here is that this subclass will turn you into the Night King.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
From Game of Thrones. You can just raise your arms, give the come at me boy sign to Jon Snow, and just an army of his own slain allies rise at your beck and call.
And just like the Night King, you can apparently be taken out in one little knife through the heart because your hit point total is rock bottom. Spoilers for Game of Thrones.
I'm a big fan of what you just said. I think that was a great way to complete the metaphor. I think Arya is definitely a rogue and would have very high sneak attack damage.
Almost certainly could kill a high-level wizard in a blow. Legit.
Yeah. Big fan of the way you just completed that metaphor.
Thank you. I'm starting to redeem myself slightly for my affiliation.
I mean, like, there must be ways. I'm sure people have done it before in terms of, like what you suggested earlier. Like, you've started out like a terrible person, but now you're redeemed.
I don't know. Maybe there's a way you could reskin it so, like, the spirit of them comes out and they're not, like, pissed about it. They're like, hey, and like, maybe they can't say anything, but they're like, attack for you. I guess it's a bit weird, obviously, if it's like someone who clearly didn't like you working for you.
Oh my god, I had a really sad thought. What if, like, when you were young, like, your whole family was slain while you were busy being a wizard, and then you saved them all and brought them back to life, and their spirits are still kind of with them, so your family are your slain subjects protecting you in fights?
Do you
like
get spirit Michonne guardians?
From The Walking Dead? No, you do not. Spirit Guardians is a cleric ability.
That should be that would be a very cool That's a very, I mean, that's a very cool premise for that. If you could get that spell, your family just appear around you, and like just fully, just like fully start going ham.
You summon the spirits of those who have died.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually once played in a game. I'm still technically playing in the game. Jasper, this was after you left.
I know what we're talking about.
There was a wizard who had lost his body and his memory and had no idea what had originally happened to him, and so he was hell-bent on creating himself a new body. Out of, I guess, he was collecting corpses of other people to study them to figure out the best way to create a body. I don't remember if that character was a necromancer, but it seems tailor-made to be a necromancer. Just wanted to throw that out there. There's a lot of cool things you can do with this where you're not, like, a complete monster, but you're this is setting you up to be sinister pretty much no matter what.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Although
sinister undertones, because you can use your power for any means. Do you know what I mean? Like it's more like the actions, I think, that people would judge you on more than the actual means in which you do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, like the Punisher or whatever is still technically a hero. Like he's just, you know, well,
by a slim margin.
Deadpool. Let's go with Deadpool.
Slim margin.
Even Deadpool, I don't know. Slightly. You might have better luck with the Punisher.
film version. Let's go for film.
Cool.
Jade, cut this out. Please cut this out, Jade.
Deadpool didn't even want to be a hero. That's the whole thing with the first one.
Oh, look, nuts. Okay, look,
Jasper,
my
did you
takes,
even watch the movies, Jasper?
Look, my takes are pretty hot today, okay? And they're not hitting the mark, yeah?
You know what they are? They're like a hot corpse. Jasper playing a necromancer in the next campaign, confirmed.
Depending on the setting as well, like you could be Dr. Frankenstein if you wanted to.
That would be hella fun.
And then you have your monsters, right? Like that would be cool.
Try and do some sort of artificer wizard like multi-class where you're resurrecting like just huge armored monsters to come like fight and just shield you from everything.
You're like really hung up on this low HP. Like you're just like really
speaking of which in the campaign in which it's a home game that I run in which Unati's a player, I've talked about it multiple times on here, one of the PCs died and was brought back in a using a method that kind of had some strong Frankenstein vibes.
The person
who did it claimed to have learned it from another person who has yet to appear, so who knows what's going on there, but a lot of things you can do with this. Should we move on to the next subclass though?
Since I'm doing one that's outside of the...
I'm going to roll, because there's two that I want to do, but I'm only going to do one on this episode. So I'm going to roll 1 to 2 is divination, 3 to 4 is enchantment.
I think I know which one you want.
Let's see. That's a 3. We're doing enchantment. Mm-hmm. All right. So enchantment and necromancy, and basically every single wizard subclass that deals with a school of magic is in the player's handbook. So basic level, everything. I have not been as many subclasses for the wizard created after the player's handbook, just because there were so many initially.
There were so many already.
Enchantment is one that I think people sleep on a little bit. So school of enchantment, just like every other wizard subclass, you can copy enchantment spells, for half the amount of, in half the amount of time and for half the cost. That's the savant thing is for every single wizard subclass, but also at level 2, you get hypnotic gaze, which lets you magically enthrall another creature as an action. They have to be within 5 feet of you. You have to be able to see them and they have to be able to see or hear you. And then you can force them to succeed on a wisdom saving throw against your wizard spell save DC or be charmed by you until the end of your next turn. The charmed creature's speed drops to 0 and the creature is incapacitated and visibly dazed. So it's very similar to the monk's stunning strike in that regard.
Okay.
Except that on subsequent turns, you can use your action to maintain this effect, extending its duration until the end of your next turn. However, the effect
very
ends.
Juicy out of combat utility for that.
Yes, if you just need somebody to not do something and you just walk up to like a guard
get past
and you
them. Poof, yeah, and you just yeah. whoop
And even in combat, if you want a free round of just everybody wailing on somebody while they're just like, just standing there getting just destroyed, could be very useful. And very useful. If you're willing to sacrifice pretty much all of your attack spells because it takes your action to maintain, you could just keep this going and they get no more saves. It's just how it goes. Now, you have to get within 5 feet, so that's a risk, but...
Sure.
The effect does end if you move more than 5 feet away from the creature, or if the creature can neither see or hear you, or if the creature takes damage. So in that regard, actually, it doesn't work to wail at everybody. I forgot about that factor. Really not. It's good in the way that Jasper said to try and take somebody out temporarily and like distract
Jeremy,
them.
Welcome over. Come over here into the shed of hot takes.
Oh, no. I have my own shed. Thank you. You stay in the stinky corpse shed. I'll stay in the forgot that one, that caveat shed.
Well, you'll end up here one day as I just pat a corpse's head and then it comes back to life briefly.
Guys, it's hot. It's hot in England. We've lost the plants. So we've all just cooked. Our brains are roasted.
It is genuinely cooked.
And we can't turn any fans on while we're recording.
Fans off.
Once the effect ends, or if the creature succeeds on its initial saving throw against the effect, you can't use this feature again on that creature until you finish a long rest. So, again, pretty much unlimited uses in total, just you can only use it once on a creature per long rest, on an individual creature, that is. So, not the greatest ability, but also not bad. If you're creative with it, it can be pretty decent. Instinctive Charm is the next thing you get at 6th level. When a creature you can see within 30 feet of you makes an attack roll against you, you can use your reaction to divert the attack, provided that another creature is within the attack's range. The attacker must make a wisdom saving throw against your wizard spell save DC. On a failed save, the attacker must target the creature that is closest to it, not including you or itself. If multiple creatures are closest, the attacker chooses which one to target. On a successful save, you can't use this feature on the attacker again until you finish a long rest. And you must choose to use this feature before knowing whether the attack hits or misses.
Hits or not.
Mm-hmm. Creatures that cannot be charmed are immune to this effect. This one, I would say, is a little better.
Better. How close does the other creature have to be to the one you're targeting?
It has to be within range.
Within range. Oh, okay. So if they were like shooting at you with like a bow. Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Cool. Okay. I was thinking if it was in melee, then. Yeah, that could be a little tricky, but no, yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, because you could basically force them to target one of your allies instead of you.
Ooh.
One of their allies instead of you, depending on the proximity. I would say this is, again, okay. It can be, because there are other spells that wizards have to try and stop attacks, I think this is a good option to have in your back pocket in case you need it.
Yes. Okay.
But it could be risky because obviously you might end up hitting an ally or something. So.
But like if it's a situation where, say, you have cast a really powerful spell that you need to maintain concentration on and your other allies can take the damage and you have very low AC and are in a vulnerable position, it could be very useful. Could be a lifesaver.
Couldn't imagine it.
Could be a lifesaver.
Yeah. Would have no idea.
None of us can imagine a scenario in which that could be the case. But, you know.
Next up.
The next one is... really good. This is a slept on ability, but it is insanely good.
Okay.
Starting at 10th level, this is called Split Enchantment. Starting at 10th level, when you cast an enchantment spell of first level or higher that targets only one creature, you can have it target a second creature.
Ooh, that is good.
I just want to reread this enchantment list.
Some of these.
In fact, I'm going to specify for wizard.
Could you use...
That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to let you get to it. But oh my god.
First level, you get Hideous Laughter, Tasha's Hideous Laughter. That can now target two people.
Cool.
You get Hold Person at second level. You get Suggestion at second level. You get Gaius at fifth level. Hold Monster at fifth level. Modify Memory at fifth level. You get Otto's Irresistible Dance at 6th level. You get Dominate Monster at 8th level. You get Feeble Mind at 8th level.
Yep.
And at 9th level, you get Power Word Kill.
There it is. There it is.
All of those can now target two creatures.
Less than 100 hit points. Blam. Two things.
Insta-kill two characters.
Insta-dead. Two characters. As a DM, that makes me want to throw up.
Pretty good.
Because that's really good.
Like, that's not a... That's a... Wow. That's really, really good.
Yeah. And even just hold person and suggestion and things like that. You can just cast this spell and take two people out for a whole
combat. How often do you get in a scenario where you're like, there is two guards by the door? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So, like, you could cast suggestion, but the other guard will see you casting suggestion. Like, there is so many applications for this.
And now you have two people under your control, essentially, for 8 hours. Mm. Or if it's Gaius, it's even more ridiculous. Gaius that's a good ability.
A really good ability. Yeah, I like that.
I found out about this from watching the Dungeon Dudes breakdown. They were ranking all of the wizard subclasses on a tier list, and they ended up ranking, I believe they ranked enchantment as S tier based primarily on that ability.
How many times do you get to use it? Once per long rest, or
every single time you cast one?
What?
There is no limit.
What?
I beg your pardon.
There's the one sentence that I read is the whole ability. So you can use it every single time you cast an enchantment spell that targets only one creature.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah, you can just, every time you cast suggestion, hit two people.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then finally, at 14th level, you get Alter Memories. You gain the ability to make a creature unaware of your magical influence on it. When you cast an enchantment spell to charm one or more creatures, you can alter one creature's understanding so that it remains unaware of being charmed. So I would say that makes spells like Charm Person and stuff like that more usable.
Because
I've never wanted to use one of those spells. For the sole reason that people always know that you did it. And that's just too risky. But additionally, before the spell expires, you can use your action to try and make the chosen creature forget some of the time it spent charmed. If the creature must succeed on an intelligent saving throw against your spell save DC, your wizard spell save DC, or lose a number of hours of its memory equal to 1 plus your charisma modifier, you can make the creature forget less time, and the amount of time can't exceed the duration of your enchantment spell. So if it's suggestion, it can't exceed 8 hours.
Sure.
Based on the back of that ability, if you went for enchantment wizard, it would be a good idea to get decent charisma as well.
Yeah, nice.
But that's basically like alter memory or modify memory. That's like a free use of alter memory,
and especially if you're then memory. Twinning on two people. Like you can do that on two people. Like you know that would be like apply to two people.
And again, you can use it as many times as you want.
Man, that's so wild. Because there's so many things where you could go like if you've made someone do something, but you want to like you know say make someone go into a place, take a thing, and give it to you. All you need to do is make them forget the last bit, and they'll forget who they gave it to. Do you know what I mean? Like stuff like that.
They can forget having done any of it. They can just be like,
they can forget the whole thing, but even if they remembered they did do it, it wouldn't matter because they wouldn't remember the person they gave it to, where they left it. It's like a handover. Like, there's a whole, you know, there's lots of applications. That is a nice class. Subclass. I like that.
It's solid. I think it's slept on in comparison to Divination, which is the other one I was considering. Divination has historically been like the premier wizard subclass. It's very, very good.
Well, head over to our Patreon. At some point, there will be a multiclass rundown.
If you want to hear me talk about it on the Patreon, head over
there. Talk about it on the Patreon. Yeah. Beautiful. So I will go in lastly, but not least, with another, I think, very powerful subclass for the wizard, and that is the Chronogy magic. This is found in the Explorer's Guide to Wildemount. As everyone knows, I'm a fan of that movie. And damn, there is some abilities in here. Little bit differently to the others. They don't get the halfing ability of any of the particular, schools they're in. That's the one, sorry, yes. But at second level, you do get Chronal Shift. You magically exert a limited control over the flow of time around a creature as a reaction after you or a creature you can see within 30 feet makes an attack roll, an ability check, or a saving throw. You can force the creature to re-roll. You make this decision after you find out whether it succeeds or not. So you can just give somebody an advantage after they've failed. Mm. They must obviously use the second result. And the ability, you can use this ability twice, and you regain any expended uses after a long rest. I think that's very second level. That's very good. It's very good.
Yeah, very useful.
There, spicy. I can think of a lot of like party saving moments that rely on like an ability, like one check, one ability check, and the ability to just go do it again.
on MagPod, currently, their second campaign, Emily Axford is playing Chronergy Wizard.
Oh, and dear, that is terrifying.
Chronal Shift has come. Yes, it is.
That is very terrifying.
The idea of Emily Axford wielding this is horrifying.
Yeah. And it's been extremely useful so far.
Wow. Very good. And also, it says... it doesn't say if they've already had advantage or disadvantage or anything like that. It's just like if they've failed or succeeded, you can just say roll it again. So like there's no bearing even what's come before to affect that roll. Like I think it's very, very useful.
Yeah.
Then you also get temporal awareness. You get to add your intelligence modifier to initiative rolls.
Starting a second level. That's pretty cool. It should be a +3 even at that level.
Yeah, for sure. Because the minimum you probably have is 16 in this, or no? Did you get a 16 on standard array?
I think you start with a 15, but you should ideally try and start with a +3 to your primary stat. If you can.
For sure. That's what I'm saying. It would be at least a +3. Yeah. Nice. So that's fun. So this is where it starts to get a little bit. A bit wild here. So we get momentary stasis. As an action, you can magically force a large or smaller creature you can see within 60 feet of you to make a constitution saving throw against your spell save DC. Unless the saving throw is a success, the creature is encased in a field of magical energy until the end of your next turn, or until the creature takes any damage. Whilst encased this way, the creature is incapacitated and has a speed of 0. You can use this feature up to your intelligence modifier as a minimum of once. I think it's a really useful spell. Obviously, it's still up until they take damage or whatever, but if you need to stop something from doing a thing, give your hot self, like Jeremy said, like a round to just prep, get some heals in, whatever it may be. Your spell save at 6th level is going to be relatively high. I think this is especially useful if you're up against like a non-monster, like anything that's like, because monsters tend to have like quite a high constitution, but like if you're up against like a person of any kind, they might not have the best con.
If you need to run away from somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because it can't take actions or reactions.
Yeah. I think that's very good. And the idea that, okay, so by 6th level, maybe we're looking at a +4 here. If you've already had an ability score improvement, you might want to, bump that up. You're looking at least 4 times. That's no spell required, no nothing. It's just an action that you can do. Like, I think that's very, very,
very
good.
Very cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a solid ability.
Yeah. Then we get Arcane Abeyance. I believe it's Abeyance. Mm-hmm. So when you cast a spell using a spell slot of 4th level or lower, you can condense the spell's magic into a moat. I really enjoyed this one. The spell is frozen in time at the moment of casting and can be held within a grey bead for 1 hour. The bead is a tiny object with an AC of 15 and 1 hit point and is immune to poison and psychic damage. When the duration ends or the bead is destroyed, it vanishes in a flash of light. And the spell is lost. A creature holding the bead can use an action to release the spell within, whereupon the bead disappears. The spell uses your spell attack and save DC, and the spell teaches the creature as its caster for all purposes. I think this is so cool and so useful. Like, oh, hey, barbarian, want a fireball? I just felt like there's some really fun potential uses for this. Maybe, and what I was thinking is earlier, if we have our Triton on the boat, you can just leave a spell on the deck, you know what I mean? And just be like, here you go, if you need this. I just think it could be a really fun a bit of a like Hail Mary move just to kind of give to someone else that's not just you. Like, I think it really does potentially give the option for someone else to be a primary spellcaster, not to mention constitution, because it says it treats the caster as it treats the person who expends it as the caster. So there's no reason you couldn't use a concentration spell. So therefore, you can have two concentration spells going at once. And if you had something like a barbarian or something holding it, you're probably going to have crazy high con saves. Is it con saves? Do they get high con saves?
Well, barbarians, I don't think, can concentrate while they're raging. But like,
no,
there are
true.
Other classes
but there are other things
really
that get good. Boosts to con and con saves, etc. So, like, you can have two high level, you know, like area effects or whatever going at once, and that could be, again, party saving. And I think for a 10th level, you get some fun spells around that time.
Yeah, it's a solid one. You get
it's a really
level spells.
Solid
really good.
Now, this one, 14th level, I think this is truly game breaking stuff right here. You peer through the possible... Oh, sorry, this is called Convergent Future. You peer through the possible futures and magically pull one of them into the events around you, ensuring one particular outcome. When a creature within 60 feet of you makes an attack roll, ability check, or saving throw, you can use your reaction to ignore the die that was rolled and decide whether they succeed or fail by one. That's just it. You just decide. Just, no, you didn't. And you failed. You do have, and this is a feature that I really like, and I think it's coming into a lot of the more, a lot of the newer stuff that we're getting from Wizards, which is that, like, for big things like this, there's like a downside. So you do get a level of exhaustion when you use this.
Okay.
Which obviously could be very bad. This is, but this is a Hail Mary move. You're using this at the end of the combat when you are, like, you just need this one thing that needs to happen.
Well, you need to burn through legendary resistances.
Plus, also, I would like to point out that this is something could be used for impossible checks. Like, there's no reason if your DM goes, well, okay, roll a 35. Okay. I rolled a 36.
Yeah.
Like, legit, you could do, like, it's That's a ridiculous,
wow.
It's
really
a ridiculous
good.
Ability. It's a ridiculous
no.
ability.
Yeah.
No. No.
That's really, really good. That's a good idea. Yeah, this is...
Put it like, as
a
DM,
really
you need to be aware, just some things you need to just say no. Because otherwise, do you know what I mean? Like, your players could abuse this
roll
ability.
Roll me a 30.
Yeah. Don't okay, I got a 31. Yeah. Right. Okay. This is like reliable talent taken to its extreme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is anyone within 60 feet. This could be the bad guy. This could be an ally. This could be you.
Yep.
It's just
somebody about to lose concentration on that spell?
No, I don't think so. Nope. I'm a bit tired now, but we succeeded.
And honestly, first level of exhaustion only gives you disadvantage on ability checks, which wizards aren't going to be making
succeeded,
a lot of ability
so.
Checks during combat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
I think that's a... It flavor-wise, it definitely makes sense. I get it. I think it's very cool. But damn, used in the right way, it's utterly broken.
Really good.
Those abilities, I would say, there's not a single bad ability in the bunch. They're all varying levels of very good. Like, one is like, ooh, and then one's like, okay.
Okay.
Like, I think, can see why that's like, competes with the Divination Wizard now for, like, the premier, like, the best wizard subclass.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
I think as an, like, if you're building, like, an AoE, like, an area of effect wizard, like, that's, like, your primary thing, I think this is so good. There's so many, uses here, you know, maintaining... two concentration spells at once, giving someone advantage even after they've rolled, you know, there's like a or disadvantage, you know, there's just a whole lot of like very cool area based, I think it, like, particularly lends itself to that, like, area based stuff or just at least support stuff, and I like it. I think it's very cool, and I like the idea of just being a time wizard. I am Doctor Who.
Woo-hoo.
And what? Although arguably cooler than Doctor Who, because Doctor Who doesn't have any of these abilities.
Also, I just like to say, character's called the Doctor, not called Doctor Who.
He's the Doctor.
Listen, I'm already in a shed of dead fucking corpses, Jeremy. Come at me. I don't care. The doctor's in here as well, okay?
I don't even like the show.
An American has just corrected a Brit on Doctor Who. I am officially in the bin this episode.
That's the whole point of the name of the show, is that the character's called the Doctor. And doctor, like, and then Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I would like to...
I'm also a dual citizen, so technically an American and a Brit.
Okay, fine. That makes it slightly better. But either way, I would like to be, if I could be unduly dispatched and resurrected as someone's zombie companion, I think that's arguably the best fate I can hope for at this point after this episode.
Ooh, here's a question. Here's a question. Mm-hmm. If you die as a necromancy wizard but are somehow able to cross back over from whatever plane your soul was sent to, mm-hmm. could yeah. you reanimate your old body?
Hell yeah, I'd let that happen.
Yeah. Too.
Yeah.
That'd be well fun. That'd be if my player found a way to do that, I'd be like, yeah. you're a straight fucking genius. Like, okay.
just do it. That sounds
hell
like
yeah.
That'd be cool.
Just give the, I don't know, give the, have two wizards in the party and give one of the other one, like the one that died, the bead of the thingy. Like, if this goes off, just resurrect yourself. Resurrection's in here somewhere. Wow.
Yeah.
That was fun. That was real fun.
Wizards are cool, dude.
Wizards are very cool.
Yeah.
I still feel like I want to... I think I'd still like the idea of like multiclassing a wizard, just because I think it gives you some cool stuff, but I'd like some other... like some melee stuff would be fun, just so I'm not completely screwed, you know, when they get close to me. Yeah. And I really like the idea of basically building... The way I imagine it now would be... like a Super Saiyan would just be like an evocation wizard crossed with like a monk. I feel like that would be super fun. A super fun build. So if you want to find out more about evocation wizards, you can head over to the Patreon and find out what they do.
I think wizard and artificer would be a pretty decent combination. I personally feel like wizards aren't super... I don't like really the idea of multiclassing with them, simply because you miss out on so many spells. Like they get so many spells.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is true.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like, I guess if you want a rogue wizard, just take Arcane Trickster, or if you want a fighter wizard, just take Eldritch Knight.
Yeah.
If you want to play a barbarian wizard, I don't know if I can help you there, because that
that's not
a good combination.
Diametrically opposed.
Just the rage. Just
okay,
the problem
with fine. I'll come up with a Super Saiyan subclass for the monk. Fine.
I feel like if I was going to build a Super Saiyan, it would be something like a combination of like barbarian and monk, because of that element of anger.
I guess. Yeah. Mm. Rage. That makes sense. Well, yeah. Okay. Getting back in the shed, everyone. That'll be all from me.
This episode has been me dunking on you, and that's unnecessary.
Yeah, I've just been watching this and been like, "Where's my popcorn?"
Arguably, this has been one of my favorite episodes. I've had a great time. As soon as I knew I was in the shed, I was very happy in here. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, "Why get out now? Why don't you just keep going?" Anything that comes into your brain, Jasper, you go for it. It doesn't matter
just
if you're wrong. Say it all.
Will have no idea just the incredible political views that had to be cut out of this episode.
Why?
Every time you always have to make it real.
Okay. But yes, justice for necromancers. I believe that we should. We should all embrace the potential of life after death.
I feel like we should end the episode.
Yeah.
I think it's time.
Prestige. This is the prestige of the episode, and
Christian
this is for our final trick. We will we'll end this episode right here.
So long, Shire folk.
Imagine if I cut
it there. So long, Shire. Honestly, I would like to suggest, yeah, I'd like to advocate
just
for that
cutting
ending.
It right there.
We'll see what I don't know what will happen. Let's
no
see.
So long, Shire folk. I actually really like that. I think
that's
we
the prestige
do that.
Of the episode. That's the final trick, is that it just cuts there.
You want to be food.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.